South Korea's Ulsan Group really speed ran the rise and fall of a business empire. Founded in 1975 with nothing, 2 years later, $165 million in export revenue, 14 subsidiaries, 8,000 employees. A year after that, bankrupt. In this video, the story of a chaebol. They never even made it 5 years. Throughout the 1950s, the South Korean economy struggled. Growth was erratic, the currency overvalued, and the economy primarily relied upon foreign aid, mining, and some agriculture. The country's primary economic policy goal was to reduce its dependency on imports, so building up domestic industry and keeping high tariffs. This is generally known as import substitution. The government had some preferential export promotion measures, since it brought in valuable foreign exchange, but on the whole, they cared more about import substitution, much like other developing countries in Latin America and South Asia at the time. Then in 1961, Park Chung-hee took over and instituted a radically different direction, an export-led growth strategy. Like many great successes, the strategy had many fathers, lessons from Japan's similar experience, plus Korea's lack of natural resources, small domestic market, its need to generate foreign currency, and a desire to relieve pressure from the Americans, so on. To encourage exports, the government harmonized the complicated exchange rate system, removing incentives to import. They lifted tariffs on and then gave tax exemptions for intermediate goods used to produce future exports, in other words, import as much as you like, as long as you use that to make exports. And the government set up a financing system to offer working capital financing at subsidized rates. And finally, Park Chung-hee's government encouraged the educated Korean populace to be entrepreneurial, praising those who succeeded in doing so. Exports over the 1960s and 1970s boomed, driving impressive economic growth. But the obsession with exports and the Wild Wild West business culture of 1970s Korea also led to some unusual happenings. Shin Sun-ho was born in 1947, the sixth of seven sons to a well-educated and respected man who had worked in finance and land reform. Several of Shin's brothers got PhDs at Harvard and MIT, becoming professors and deans. In a way, they inspired the soft-spoken and introverted Shin to do business. "All of my brothers," he said, "are considerable successes as scholars and teachers, but I saw that they had to give up valuable pursuits because of circumstantial limits. I concluded that only business is limitless." Shin studied applied mathematics at the elite Seoul National University and was a participant in student activism. After graduating and completing his 3 years of military service, he started working as a sales salaryman brokering import-export business deals. He then founded Ulsan Industry with his wife in September 1974, reporting a minimum capital of about ₩1,000,000, or $2,000, to avoid fees. Later media reports of Shin founding it with his friends, or with just $2,000 only, were said by him to be false. The company got its name from the nickname of Shin's father. It literally means Chestnut Mountain. Ulsan began in a shabby hole in the wall in Seoul with nothing more than a telephone and desk. Shin ran around looking for ways to make money, just another small business amongst many. In February 1975, Ulsan moved to a new building. There, Shin came across a bunch of documents sent from Kuwait by a guy named Won Gil-nam. Won is a Korean citizen, but after spending time as the first Secretary General of a Korean Islamic Relations Association, he moved to Kuwait and joined their government within their Ministry of Communications. Thanks to the oil crises, the countries of Middle East, like Kuwait, were building lots of infrastructure but needed materials. So Won started a business and issued several quote-unquote letters of credit to potential suppliers back home. These documents essentially said that a Kuwaiti importer can guarantee payment for building materials if those materials can be delivered to them in Kuwait. Other Korean companies received the letters first, but didn't see the work as particularly profitable. The prices were low, and companies worried about the risk of unloading at the Middle East's then-undeveloped ports. Imagine getting held up at the ports in 40 degrees Celsius heat, waiting to unload, sometimes for as long as a month. Not only that, you incur what are called demurrage fees, penalties when a cargo gets stuck at port. So the letters of credit passed around until finally landing at Yulsan's doorstep. Where others saw bad business, Shin saw an opportunity. In June 1975, he recruited some of his school friends and registered a new Yulsan trading company to take on the job. Thanks to the government's export-oriented policies, Yulsan can use the Kuwaiti letters of credit as collateral for a short-term 90-day bank loan for up to 86% of the deal's value. Even better, the loan's interest rate was subsidized. Normal bank loans' interest rates were from 19 to 25%. An export loan, on the other hand, had a rate of just 9%. Great, but how to make money when the prices offered by the Kuwaiti importers were so low? And how to avoid getting detained at the Middle Eastern ports? Shin decided to charter his own ships himself for the most favorable rates. Yulsan rented a 14,000-ton ship named the Ocean Dragon, filled it with leftover building materials like cement, plywood, and steel rebar, and went to Kuwait. And that was the beginning of a business. To ensure that their Middle Eastern customers got their shipments in time, Yulsan commissioned helicopters and bought scrapped landing crafts from Hong Kong to unload the ships as fast as possible. They pulled out every possible stop. The story goes that one time the Yulsan people bribed their ship's captain to set fire to piles of wet burlap bags stacked on the deck, knowing that the Saudi port authorities would prioritize docking a ship seemingly on fire. These acts of daring worked. In its first 6 months of operations over the second half of 1975, Yulsan reported $3.4 million in export revenues, mostly cement. In its first year of operations, Yulsan started buying new businesses. They targeted bankrupt businesses that had been seized by the banks. The first acquisition in late December 1975 was the insolvent Shinjin Aluminium Company. Shinjin had been founded by the Korean automotive pioneer Kim Chang-won to supply aluminium sashes for the larger Shinjin Automotive Company. They were losing ¥1 billion a year, about $2 million in 1975 dollars, which is why Yulsan only had to pay half of that to acquire them. Nevertheless, a newly founded company buying a company with such a storied name and then giving it their own name was what first put Yulsan on the map. But Yulsan was just getting started. In April 1976, they acquired the insolvent Gumyong Shipping Company, renamed that to Yulsan Shipping to fuel their exports business. In that same year, they also acquired the Dongwon Construction Company, renaming it to Yulsan Construction. This let Yulsan take on full-scale construction projects at home and overseas. In its first full year, 1976, Yulsan export revenues grew 12 times over to $42 million. The growth caught the attention of the Korean government. Pleased that Yulsan was doing so well in helping to fulfill the country's export goals, the government awarded them a prestigious industrial medal. Yulsan continued its tear of acquisitions in 1977, adding 8 more companies. Some of these companies seemed quite distant from exporting building materials. For example, Yulsan bought the Kyunghyung Trading Company, a textiles manufacturer, and started a clothing line with them called Bambim. They also bought, among other things, a tourism business that started off giving tours to Yulsan's technical staff, a shoes company, a hotel, even an industrial college. About a third of their money was spent on acquiring land, some 660,000 to 990,000 square meters of then unused land in Seoul. For the 1977 year, the Yulsan Group generated $165 million in export revenues. The company's management gained renown around Korea for their boldness and aggression. Shin treated it all as a game, really. In a rare interview with The Times in July 1978, Shin said, "Money was not my objective. To be more precise, I do not love it. I, quote-unquote, play business like sport." By spring 1978, the Yulsan Group owned 14 businesses, employed 8,000 people, and had total assets worth about $230 million. They were in the midst of acquiring electronics, machinery, and petrochemical companies That year, the Korean government designated Yulsan a general trading company. These were Korea's version of Japan's Sogoshosha, famous massive companies that trade all sorts of goods wholesale. It was a prestigious label that only 12 other companies in South Korea had, companies like Samsung, Hyundai, and Samwa. From the start, Yulsan Group borrowed ferociously to acquire its various businesses. Plenty of Korean companies in that time racked up huge amounts of debt. Yulsan just did it faster, harder, and flashier than everyone else. At the start of 1978, they had a staggering 27 times more debt than shareholders' equity. The average general trading company, on the other hand, had just 4.9 times more debt than equity. The real core issue for the Yulsan Group, however, was that much of that debt was short-term debt, the aforementioned 3-month export loan that used a letter of credit as its sole collateral. With 2/3 of Yulsan's assets tied up in illiquid real estate or inventory, the group's lifeblood was tied to its exports. Without growing export revenues, they cannot get the short-term funding they need to survive. In July 1978, literally as that praise-filled Times article printed, it all came crashing down. Earlier in the spring of that year, the Saudi Arabian government caught Yulsan Group doing some wholesale distribution and retail. This was illegal for foreigners, and Yulsan got a fine. That was the end of that, but either accidentally or maliciously, the news spread amidst the South Koreans back home that Yulsan had been entirely banned from Saudi Arabia. Banks and financial companies were suddenly less willing to loan money. However, the more devastating hit was in August, when the Park government announced measures to suppress real estate speculation, the 8-8 measures, one of which was a ban on the exports of building materials to support a big apartment construction effort. The 8-8 measures also smashed the real estate market. Yulsan could not sell any units from a recent apartment project its construction company completed, nor could it unload the real estate it had bought up during the initial run-up in prices. And now that their cash cow building exports were banned, the company missed its 1978 export goal of $400 million, only generating $150 million in sales. The export credits dried up. Its short-term funding now gone, Yulsan started melting down. In September 1978, Yulsan requested help from its main bank, Seoul Bank and Trust. The bank, along with two others, provided 7 billion won, or about $14 million in 1978 U.S. dollars, to try and save the company. It did not. In November 1978, Yulsan announced that it would sell 7 of its affiliated companies, including its electronics, leather, and chemicals businesses. The checks began to bounce. Desperate, the Yulsan people allegedly turned to fraud. They had their overseas entities issue false letters of credit for special commodities, which were actually ordinary rocks. The letters were then used for more short-term export loans. Then in 1979, things got weird. On January 25, 1979, Shin Sun-ho receives a call from someone claiming to be from the Blue House, the presidential office, summoning him to the Economic Planning Bureau office. Shin cannot ignore the call, and so travels to the EPB, where he is picked up by another car. But when the car starts traveling away from the Blue House, Shin gets suspicious. He leaps out the back door at a toll booth gate and hides, barely escaping the kidnapping attempt. He then reports his ordeal to the press, perhaps implying that the kidnappers were somehow associated with the government. As rumor has it, this sets off someone in the actual government. A week afterwards, Shin and his team worked out a 9 billion won financing plan with his creditors to bridge the company and give it more time to get on to solid ground. Then, without warning, the plan is vetoed by someone at the highest levels of power. With that, Yulsan's fate was guaranteed. The business goes bankrupt. And in April 1979, the 31-year-old Shin, along with an aide and a bank official, were arrested. The Korean government reassured ANSI foreign investors, Bank of America somehow was owed $5 million, by announcing that all of Yulsan's $310 million of loans will be repaid. The group's various bits are stripped apart, and almost all of its assets seized. The government also promised more stringent checks on the issuance of these short-term export bank loans so that another Yulsan cannot use them again to bootstrap their way to heaven. In November 1979, the lauded business prodigy Shin was sentenced to several years in jail for embezzlement and fraud. His legal ordeal lasted for several more years until 1985, when he finally completed his partially suspended sentence and probation. Democracy advocate Kim Dae-jung later wrote that Korean President Park Chung-hee himself was the power who took down the flashy Shin Sun-ho. That Park had been the one who nixed the final rescue plan to save the collapsing group back in February 1979. When asked in an interview 20 years later about who was responsible for Yulsan's collapse, Shin smiled and said, "Does it matter who it was now? Let's forgive our enemies." Maybe there was some malicious power behind the scenes of it all, but considering the company's massive debts and near total dependence on 3-month export credits, I don't fault Park or anyone else in the government for thinking that it would be better to just let these guys go. So Yulsan sank into oblivion, but Shin somehow managed to make a comeback. Before the bankruptcy, the Seoul city government acquired some of the land Yulsan bought to build the current Supreme Court building in Seocho. They gave in exchange 2 new lots. The first lot was taken over by Lotte and now hosts Lotte World, the massive mall and theme park. After Shin returned to Yulsan, he developed the second lot, which the creditors could not seize thanks to circumstances and a contract quirk, into what is now the Central City Commercial Area and Bus Terminal in Seoul. It opened in 2000, having endured great turmoil, including even the Asian financial crisis in the late 1990s. The department store Chaebol Shinsegae later bought into the complex in 2012, and in 2014, Shin was reported as having a net worth of $750 million, one of Korea's richest men. A happy ending, I suppose. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the newsletter, and I'll see you guys next time.